Council. Our next topic has probably generated more discussion, controversy, and consternation in the industry than any subject matter that, at least in my 30 years of career that I've seen. This is in the debate that's taking place in our industry on sow housing. Most of your articles and news releases and that has been dominated recently by this subject matter, as we've seen a rash of announcements by customers ranging from quick service restaurants all the way most recently to a major retailer. This is a very complex issue that we're dealing with, and we feel it's necessary to bring forth factual discussions and, most importantly, to deal with a dialogue of the impact that these are going to have. These are not simple decisions or announcements that can be made without understanding the first and foremost the impact that it's going to have on America's pork producers. Secondly, the availability and supply of our pork products. We only have to look to what's taken place across the pond in England, to what can happen to a once viable industry that today, for all practical purposes, is a small shadow of what it once was, both in the amount of pork that's produced, the price of pork, and most importantly, the number of pork producers that exist today in England. We feel it's time for discussions and dialogue and understanding more the complexity of this issue and factual information. We've had the opportunity to sit with a number of our customers in discussing this, and one of the challenges that was brought forth is the need for more information as it relates to, first and foremost, the actual supply numbers that exist for this. We've seen all kinds of numbers quoted in the press as it relates to the availability of product that comes from alternative sow housing than our normal gestation stall type product. So we felt it necessary, in order to have open and honest discussion with our customers, to look at the actual availability of product that we have in the U.S. from producers. And so with that, we embarked on a study with Dr. Ron Plain from the University of Missouri to survey the industry to get a better indication of what these numbers actually were. As you know, there is no reported statistical data available from USDA or others as it relates to this kind of particular issue on sow housing. And we have said from the very beginning, this is not a matter of right or wrong. We have producers out there who have proven their ability to produce product in both systems. Our stance is the fact that this is about animal care and caregivers' choice. But it is important, as we've always talked about, the fact that says we allow the marketplace to decide. If we have customers who are willing to purchase a product, willing to pay for it, we have producers who stand ready and willing to come forward and develop the product for that. But we need to understand the impact that this is going to have on the supply chain process. So the first step in today's session is to present that data. You will be the first to see it, to hear it. And it's fresh off of the information. Dr. Plain and I was having conversations as late as yesterday evening about this, finalizing and getting the information in. And so with that, I'm going to turn it over to Dr. Plain to present that information. Ron?
Thanks, Dallas. It's good to be here. This is a fast survey. This is about a month ago that Dallas contacted me about doing this survey. And when you're trying to, you know, do something, we definitely wanted to have results here for the expo, and so it constrains a bit what you can do. First of all, you can't survey all U.S. hog farms that quickly, so we went with an abbreviated list. Basically, only firms with 1,000 sows and larger were included in our survey questionnaire. And so that's, you know, doesn't represent all the hog farms in America, but you can get a big chunk of the hogs fairly quickly if you start at with the largest firms in your survey. We did this by email, which is quick and allows you to do this kind of stuff very rapidly, but has some challenges on getting the right email address and getting people to read their email. A lot of people, I'm sure, like me, that get far more email than they can readily make their way through. But you want to know the results. We had 70 firms that we were able to get numbers from by yesterday. Those 70 firms have basically 3.6 million sows, bred gilts, that they're responsible for. Some of these firms manage more than they own. They don't necessarily own all of these, but control or own 3.6 million sows. USDA tells us what the breeding herd is, but they don't break out sow numbers, but we think there's roughly 5.7 million sows bred gilts in the country, so 62.6% of the sows and bred gilts are represented, we think, by the 70 firms that responded to our survey. It's a four-question survey. What's the name of your firm? How many sows, bred gilts? What percent of these females are currently in open pen gestation? We define that as being in a pen that allowed them to turn around freely without touching the sides of the pen once they've been confirmed pregnant. So this is open pen gestation for confirmed pregnant sows and gilts. The average for those 70 firms, 17% of the females in an open pen gestation. That was the third question. The fourth question is, give us an estimate of what percent will be 2 years from now. And the answer on average, weighted, this is weighted average based upon the number of sows, not quite 23% was their forecast of what they would have in open pen gestation 2 years from now. Interestingly, as Dallas alluded to, an awful lot of firms somewhere in between 0 and 100% on this. These were, you know, a lot of very large firms and tends to have a lot of facilities, and it's clear that a number of these firms are probably trying to learn what the costs and management requirements are for open pen gestation. So a lot of firms at varying positions between 0 and 100 on their gestation facilities. Which brings up an issue with respect to actual being able to deliver product in a segregated manner. You've got to not only have sows in open pen gestation to have a product, but you have the marketing system has to incorporate some sort of method of segregating and tracking the product in order for consumers to be assured that they're getting what the retailers say they're getting. Anyway, short survey and short summary. So, Dallas?
Thank you, Dr. Plain. We will, at the end here, make Dr. Plain available for questions that you have on this. Again, as Dr. Plain pointed out, this was not a full, but our ability to, first and foremost, identify those sow producers and reach out to them, explain the rationale of what we were looking for. This was not a survey in regard to justify one or other, but just factual information to be able to provide to the marketplace of where we're currently at and how the industry is prepared to meet any demands that might be placed on it. As again, more importantly in this is the understanding the fact that says while these numbers are slightly higher than we anticipated, it also points out the fact that says many of these are mixed within the operations. It's not as though that these are exclusive standalone facilities by themselves. And many of these operations were categorizing, you know, for example, when they had their gilts in open pens, that they classified that as well. So The one thing that, again, the real takeaway than the message that, we want to have happen in the sequence of questions that we have and we wanted to relate to our customers is, first and foremost, we do care. We have a shared value system that says we care about our animals, we care about the way that they're raised, and we have a commitment to do so. We have we stand on take a lot of great pride in the quality assurance programs that we voluntarily have put forth. Our We Care initiative and PQA Plus program is in all honesty, sets the stage for all species groups as it relates to the industry's commitment and support throughout the chain through the packer side. Again, secondly, this is a very complex issue. This is not a simple announcement kind of discussion where that can go. There's the need for more dialogue to occur. As you saw in our press release that we came out yesterday, our challenge to our customers in the food service and retail business is we deserve to be part of this discussion. And to date, very little, if any, discussion is being had with producers on the impact of these decisions. There needs to be an understanding of the ability of the supply chain to meet these demands, because as we understand this, as we saw throughout the process, is the ability for segregation and verification and ultimately traceability of these issues. Because it comes to the point in truth and labeling, the fact that consumers today are very concerned about what the product says or statements it's made, and we have an obligation to assure that our customers are getting what it is that they think they are. The next area in this is the willingness to pay for the product. Our industry has demonstrated over the years the ability to meet demands from the marketplace, whether it's breed specific of things that may relate to niche products, antibiotic-free product, ractopamine-free, or Asian-cut Japanese product. Our industry stands ready to meet those wishes of the customer if they're willing to pay for it. Lastly is the understanding the impact that this has on our producers, the financial potential burden that this places on our producers for really no gain, because most all of the studies that you see in this as it relates to the footprint that is there for the facilities is going to require more square footage available for the female, and as a net result, the output is reduced for that farm, and so it puts an economic burden on our producers. And so with that, I've asked Mark Greenwood from a lending perspective to come and give us a perspective that maybe we haven't heard or talked about or been in the news as much about as it relates to, in all of these decisions, at the end of the day, what impact is this having on the economic viability of our producers? And more importantly, from a lender's perspective that oftentimes is engaged in this process of understanding of what their view on it. And so, Mark, if you would please join us, I appreciate it.
Good morning, everybody. I appreciate having the opportunity to speak to the group and work with NPPC regarding the economic issues from a lender's perspective on this. And I probably don't have as many answers as I do questions in regards to how this is all going to play out. You know, and what I try to do is, you know, just give you a lender's perspective of if you're an independent producer and all of a sudden you've got a fair amount of your debt paid down on a sow facility, and some of the data that we've seen, and there's still, to me, more data for us to understand and see where we're all going to play out on what, you know, in terms of square footage, all those types of things in terms of cost. And we do work with systems that have both. What we've seen in our portfolio is about, Ron, from your survey, it was about 83%. Our view would be closer to 90% on most of the people that we work with. Probably have the individual stalls versus pen gestation. The issue is if you're an independent producer and you've paid part of your debt down on that facility, in terms to go back and borrow on that facility, what we've seen is probably about anywhere from $200 to $300 a sow space from some of the data that we've seen. An example that I would use is, you know, let's say you have $500 per sow space of debt on that facility, and all of a sudden you had to go back in and you had to borrow, you know, between $200 to $300 to to convert that facility back over. From a lender's view, and it's a little bit, we've done some work on soil filtration projects as well, and we'd probably view it as the same way. You inherently will not get any extra value for that facility because you did pen gestation. So it really, in our view, immediately would probably come straight out of working capital or cash. You would have to make sure that from a financial perspective, you have the financial wherewithal to, number one, even do that conversion. If a producer is somewhat highly leveraged, it will be very difficult for that producer to do that. And so with some type of assurances, either through some marketing arrangements or a different affiliation, there is some undue economic risk for that producer and also the lender, and when you're trying to provide capital. And the other issue would be is, okay, what is the square footage? If you have an existing footprint on a facility, and if you have to go ahead and re-permit to actually expand that to maybe meet or comply, can you get the permit? The second question is if you just kind of looked at your current facility, in essence, in what we've talked to some clients, you'd probably have to downsize probably in the neighborhood of anywhere from 10 to 20%, again, depending on where the square footage would all play out. How does that affect that producer's pig flow as well? When you're talking about all in and all out, and Dallas brought up a great point, is how do you segregate that? There's a lot more questions than answers for us in how the industry is going to be able to work from a capital perspective in order to pay for this in a manner and still be competitive in the marketplace. It is, you know, one of those things that I think we need to have further discussion and fully understand what the economic consequences are for our producers. And, you know, I'm not here to address the animal welfare standpoint. I think Dallas said it very well. But the economics we need to fully understand for our producers and our industry.
Again, thank you very much. Today is, like I said, we can't say this enough as it relates to the complexity of this.